Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, the visual arts, communications, and comparative religion. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're talking with Julie Napolin, who helped create the Price Lab podcast, and by Sarah Milinski, the Price Lab program manager and podcast producer. Price Lab podcast is a series focused on the people who are building, using, and critiquing the digital tools and techniques that are transforming the humanities in the 21st century. I just want to say one little thing at the beginning of this segment for our listeners, which is part of what spurred me and Ellen to want to do this particular program at this time, is this is our 24th program. We are coming up on 2 years of doing our own digital humanities-based podcast.
And we thought it would be fun to do a digital humanities podcast about digital humanities podcasting. So I'm sort of curious, over the past couple of years that you all have been doing this podcast, what issues do you see evolving and what issues do you feel like we're getting stuck on?
Something I just observed in the 2 years that I was at the Price Lab, it just seems that the question is emerging, what is digital humanities? And of course, there was this moment when we thought maybe it was going to save the humanities, and the humanities are still in peril. But one of the things I really respect about the podcast is its continued emphasis upon race and intersectionality. To me, it seems like that's where DH is really going, if it's going to go anywhere. Those are recurring issues that come up. Because I think before there was some kind of retrograde notions that technology, especially DH, could achieve a kind of neutrality or objectivity. In a way, it was kind of a throwback to certain Enlightenment ideals. And one thing I've always appreciated about the Price Lab, and with it the podcast, is that they've never been seduced by those myths. They've always been pushing these areas of race and gender, ethnicity, nation, the archive, the city, the community.
Just to get a term definition for the listener that might not have any idea what we're talking about, you said race and intersectionality.
When I say intersectionality, I am drawing from Black feminist traditions, and these are scholars who have emphasized the extent to which race, gender, and class cannot be separated from each other. That, you know, if you're talking about race, you're always also talking about gender and class, and vice versa.
I'm curious to hear you all talk about the way that some of the DH scholars have been driving these discussions about the data is not neutral. That's one of the discussions that I see trickling through to a much larger realm. Did all those discussions start out of the digital humanities?
These discussions are really driven by the scholars that are being brought to the Price Lab. Sarah, in partnership with Stuart Varner and Jim English, continue to bring people who are asking these kinds of questions. These questions are foundational to what the Price Lab is about. One of the things they've always been asking is, what is the digital humanities? And maybe it's not as limited as we think. That's what makes it such an exciting place that intersects with so many different types of scholars.
Do you see the digital humanities field changing and becoming more inclusive, or changing in its overall approaches beyond Price Lab?
Absolutely, especially since the publication of books like Safia Noble's Algorithms of Oppression and Jesse Daniels' works on racism and chat rooms and the non-neutrality of the internet as a virtual space. These questions are now at the fore of what DH scholars are doing. The other thing that DH scholars are doing, and I wouldn't have known this had I not participated in the Price Lab, is certain kinds of reparative work. For example, Alex Gill at Columbia, who works connecting people who are incarcerated to digital technology and helping them to create Twitter bots. And so thinking, what's the bare minimum that you need in order to do digital work? And how can we begin there rather than thinking about maximalism? How can we get that out to people? So this kind of community building dimension and repair dimension of DH, that's something that was really exciting to me that I learned about through participating in the Price Lab that I wouldn't have known about before.
I think that one of the ideas behind the podcast is we wanted to share the way that we think about DH particularly. So that really informed who we're having on and what kind of discussions we're having. And it seems fair to say that the Price Lab is very much desirous to see more DH that's really focused on questions of race, questions of equity. That's the sort of work that we're inspired by. We're inspired by work that really engages in these questions around equity and race and reparative work.
Most of the people that we talk to are not working in academe. So they might be artists, or they might be working for a museum, or they might be archivists. But the same themes always come up. What drives their work is expanding access, making information available to the people who need it. Collaboration turned into a surprisingly consistent theme. None of us can do this work on our own. That part of doing this work is learning to build and work with your team. And so I was curious whether you all see themes emerging besides the racism and intersectionality and how it impacts how we understand our history or our literature, or whatever.
It was really about how to bring that very exciting discussion to potentially hundreds of people. One of the hallmarks of academia is that it's cloistered. You know, you have to have your ID card to get into the building. You have to have the email address to even get the invite. And the podcast becomes a perfect opportunity to get those discussions out there. I know that doesn't directly answer your question, but it's what it makes me think of.
No, I think it does. And I guess if you don't mind revisiting, is talking a little bit about how you involve students and then different interviewers, because that is a kind of a collaboration. If you put a librarian with a librarian, they're going to talk about different things than you might ask a librarian or I might.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really great question, because I think at the heart of all of this, when we are listening to a podcast or watching some media, right, you don't always see all the work behind it. You know, you don't always know how many people went into making a given product. So I can say, while I do a significant portion of editing, there are so many other people involved. Students who are collaborating on the podcast, you come in to help with the first paper edits of an episode, or perhaps even cut the episode, or find musical interludes or sound effects, or kind of like our building audio storytelling elements into what we're doing. I think there's certainly a lot of feedback. Like, I used to pass episodes to Julie on occasion to be like, hey, what do you think of this? Like, how is this sounding? You know, I don't have a technical background in audio production. So there were a lot of question marks for me just in terms of like, how loud should things be? Like, how many spaces should there be between, you know, sentences when people are talking? Like, how to make it sound naturalistic and high enough quality that people will want to engage with it. It's certainly, this whole thing has been a learning process. And I think Stuart is very hands-on, our managing director. He is often the person asking for folks to join us on the podcast and just saying like, hey, would you like to talk with us about your work? You know, and I think that's something that we're all very grateful for. And we are at a large institution. We're at a very well-funded institution. But that said, we have to make the decision to spend time and resource on this. I do quite a bit of things for the organization that has nothing to do with the podcast.
You've been working overtime on the podcast.
Yes.
You've kind of burned the midnight oil. I've been wondering about that sometimes. I'm like, is Sarah getting paid for this?
Yes, I am getting paid for it. You know, but I'd say it does all come out in the wash. But it was something that we had to make a very critical decision at a certain point when we really realized, oh, creating a podcast actually is going to take a lot of labor. And part of my salary goes to that. That's like a very, I'd say, conscious decision to have part of our time be spent doing this. And I think that speaks to the importance that we feel it can have just in terms of creating outreach That said, it is a bit of a niche, you could say, perhaps, like what we're doing, but we'd really like it to reach a larger audience. And I hope to devote more time to that, to figuring out different outreach strategies and releasing this in all the different ways that it can be listened to. Right now, we're just on SoundCloud, you know, but we do plan on working with a student worker next year who will probably help edit the podcast. That's something that I usually teach the student to do, at least partially. It's a very pedagogically based process. Like, I'm learning, people are learning while they're doing it, which for me is great. I graduated from the new school where Julie teaches in media studies and production. So for me, this is just a lot of fun. I genuinely have a blast doing it. It's not exactly a theme, but we do ask everyone, what's your background? What made you want to get into this work? And that really has brought up quite a bit of interesting stories and material. And some folks, you know, it's a pretty like straight shot. They're like, oh, I've always wanted to be in academia. And, you know, and other folks like Wendy Chun talked about starting off as a data scientist and how her very particular journey in having to deal with a violent episode at a university where she was studying in Montreal really shaped the way she thought about data and about the way people understood it. And that kind of led her to work that looks much more like what we were talking about now in terms of digital humanities. I really enjoy hearing the humanistic stories behind what led people to get into academia.
And to be passionate and enthusiastic about their chosen field. Because we've certainly seen that. When the people are knowledgeable and enthusiastic, then my experience has been they're always articulate and interesting to listen to. I actually just want to ask one sort of detail thing. The New School, what is the New School?
The New School is a university in New York City. And so I was visiting at Penn as a fellow. And so it was just kind of kismet that Sarah had also spent time at the New School. And so we were kind of fellow travelers who ended up meeting in Philadelphia. I just wanted to add that the students in my class who had no experience with radio or audio production, they just knew that they loved podcasting and wanted to participate in it. Sarah was so excited by some of the pieces that, if I'm not mistaken, some of them were featured on the SoundCloud page, or they might be at some point. But what I noticed about the student pieces is how empowered they felt to use the medium to tell a story and to be in conversation with strangers. And that I think as young people, that was very empowering for them. But I think there is an intersection there with what Sarah was saying about what leads people into academia, in that most people seem to have some sort of origin story of how they got into this. That DH is really about telling stories and that it's a tool of narrative. And, you know, I'm a literature studies scholar, so I'm inclined to think of it that way. But I just think the storytelling aspect is really important to the podcast, but also to the student work and to what the scholars are doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The podcast and the class have been capacious enough to facilitate stories that are critical of the institution. You know, there is a history of Penn being in what was once a Black neighborhood and issues of gentrification and urban renewal. And those stories intersect with the campus in really powerful ways. And some of my students have wanted to tell those stories. And they've been trying to use DH and podcasting to think critically about their own position as students and participants in this institution.
That's so cool.
For all that academia sometimes from the outside takes knocks, I actually always felt that's one of the things academia can be really good at is self-critique, sometimes brutal self-critique.
Absolutely.
Thank you both so much for being with us today to talk about not just your podcast, but the digital humanities. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you would like more information about the Price Lab podcast, you can visit their website online at pricelab.sas.upenn.edu/podcast. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.